You are listening to Wells Tech, episode 640, recorded on Tuesday, October 20th, 2020. Zoom done right. Wells Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It's part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Center. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Craver. Today on the show, Sally and I discuss Zoom best practices, how to run an effective virtual meeting. It's really not the software's fault. It's up to you. We also talked to somebody on the front lines, Pastor Phil Kasmer, who's been using Zoom at Christ the Lord in Brookfield for a Zoom hybrid Bible study, amongst other things. We have our picks of the week, good news from TechSmith, and I highlight the Amazon Alexa app. Great ministry resource, Gospel Outreach with Media 2020 conference coming up, good community feedback, a good together video in our Wells Now segment, all that and more. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody, to Wells Tech. This is episode 640. We're recording this on Tuesday, October 2020. A lot of 20s, Ms. Draper.
Yeah.
How are you?
I am very good. Thank you. This is the week our temperatures reached 20 overnight.
In the 20s, yes.
Yes. And my kids' temperatures are going to be highs of 20s in the next few days. They're going down to 6 degrees in North Dakota. Aren't they crazy to live there? Goodness.
Yeah. Good thing for the old heater that you can crank up. I turned mine on, I have to admit, a couple weeks ago. It got cold a couple days, and then I just never turned it off. Are you one of those that kind of waits till the last possible time that so you suffer through most of October and you won't do it till November?
You nailed me. Yes, that is correct. I don't mind it being cold at night. As a matter of fact, I like it cold at night. So, yeah, waiting as long as we can.
I do too, but I don't like it cold during the day.
Yeah.
And, you know, working from the home office, you know, maybe around 50%. I bought a little space heater, I have to admit, so I can keep the heat down like we normally do in the kind of away mode, and I can just crank up my little toe warmer. So
very good.
I've learned some of life's luxuries in my old age. Take advantage of those. All right. Well, we're on episode 640. Hardly seems possible that we've been doing it that many weeks, consecutive weeks, or very close to. And we just keep finding things to talk about, Sally.
We do. I'd hate to say it, but maybe we have COVID to thank for a lot of the more recent discussions. We have spent a lot of time.
It's an easy mark, yes.
Because ministry looks a lot different than it did when we recorded about 20 episodes ago at the beginning of this year. And one of the things that's very different about ministry is that we've gone to relying on video conferencing a whole lot more than we ever had in the past.
That's for sure.
I know many of our congregations are back to meeting in person, and my congregation included. I'm at Christ the Lord in Brookfield, Wisconsin, and we are having services on the weekends, and that's such a blessing to be able to be together in person. But we haven't quite kicked in the Bible studies and the Sunday schools and things like that yet. So we're still relying on video conferencing for some of that.
Yep. And there are lots of tools out there. And we thought we would just spend a little time today talking about one of those tools in particular. But I think some of the concepts that we'll talk about apply to whatever tool it is that you're using, whether that's a streaming service or Google Meet or whatever they're calling it these days, Microsoft Teams. But we're going to focus on Zoom. Zoom kind of has taken on that everybody does, you know, just says Zoom it. You know, we're going to do Zoom even when they're not using Zoom. Kind of like Kleenex, right? or Google it. And Zoom has obviously benefited from that. But there are some general best practices. And I've done a number of presentations over the last 6 to 8 months with folks who are just getting into it and trying to figure out how best to do it and use it in different contexts. It wasn't too long ago that I met with our Christian giving counselors who are looking to use Zoom or just video conferencing in general to meet with congregations, with organizations, with individuals to talk about ministry opportunities that they can get involved with and support. And so I had a chance to do that. I will share the presentation in the show notes here. But there were just kind of three or four different key areas that I talked to them about. One of the key ones was in the area of scheduling, especially if you're doing this with individuals or small groups, but maybe even larger groups, where this is kind of the key to get it all going because it's not as easy as maybe it could or should be. And that's one of the reasons Zoom kind of took off, so to speak, is they tried to make it as dummy-proof as possible, because keep in mind, there's a learning curve both on the presenter side, but there's also a learning curve on the, you know, the consumer side, the person maybe jumping into this who doesn't do this for a living and is just jumping in occasionally as a participant. On the scheduling side, I think in the area of Zoom, there are different tools that can help you. Zoom, for instance, has a very good web interface where you can do some planning ahead, some nice scheduling, lots of bells and whistles that you can dive in and tweak as, you know, all the way from, if people come in muted or if you can have extra hosts who can start the meeting or whether participants can join before you do. All these things are configurable. They also have an app that you can download that gives you some of that same functionality. And then if you use Outlook, and I think there's even some of these for other clients, other email clients, where you can use their scheduling right within the meeting scheduler. So you can schedule a meeting with Outlook and attach a Zoom meeting to it. So just the hurdle of getting it down, getting it timed, getting the time zones correct, getting the phone numbers out, or the links to join the conversation is obviously critical. You need everybody on the same page. So I think Zoom does a nice job of that, and the other tools do too. But those are things to think about as you get going here. How am I going to clearly get this information in the hands of the people? Another part of that is to use the tool to send reminders. And normally I'd recommend sending a reminder. A lot of them have automated ways to do this. Send it a day ahead and maybe even an hour ahead so that if they've lost or cannot find that information that you sent a week ago, they're at least going to have it in their inbox the day before and an hour before. So it's, you know, at the top of their list so that they can just click a link or dial a number right out the door.
So, Martin, I'd jump in with a little question for you on the scheduling side. I know it was a big deal early on, maybe the first month, that Zoom became the topic of almost everyone's video conferencing needs. And people began a different verb. It was Zoom bombing, where people were just happening into your meetings and taking over them or doing things you didn't want them to do in your meetings. Is there a solution for that as you're scheduling the meetings?
Right. Zoom has always had the ability to do that, but they've kind of defaulted in their settings to some of these key security areas, for instance, requiring a waiting room. So as people come into the meeting, they don't jump right into the group meeting, but you have to let them in. So they sit in a waiting room, and then you can let them in once you see who they are. And then obviously password protecting the meeting, I still think is a good best practice, even though the link has only been shared with them. That was one of the problems with Zoom bombing, is people would guess the links and intrude on your particular meeting.
Or even share them publicly. Maybe if you aren't going to password protect, at least just email them out to a small group of people or whatever.
Exactly. So the larger the group, the more you want to be concerned with that, of course. Mm-hmm. I think a best practice would be just kind of gauge the comfort level of the people that are joining and treat it as such. So over communicate, maybe give links to videos ahead of time or step-by-step instructions. So don't just assume everybody knows how to do it. The last thing you want to do is kind of create a divide, a digital divide, so to speak, between those people who are comfortable with technology and those who aren't. Because it is certainly approachable. It's not hard, but you know, obviously some people are more comfortable than others. So don't assume anything and kind of gauge that with your membership or the people that you're trying to visit with. Part of that is knowing and communicating kind of the minimum requirements to use the tool. Maybe there are some that you're trying to work with that are using super old technology, and video conferencing does somewhat or can tax the system that you are using. A lot of CPUs and GPUs and all the U's are needed to kind of have a good experience. Another part of that, which is I think everybody who's been on a video conferences can attest to, is the feedback sometimes, the person with the bad microphone who doesn't know how to mute it or is using the onboard microphone and camera and speakers, and every time somebody talks there's a bad echo, even though some of the software today tries to take care of that. It's just going to be a bad experience for everybody if there's one. And there are tools, and that would be an encouragement for everybody to know their tools. If you're the leader, know where that mute button is so that you can mute people and remind them to mute themselves or unmute themselves if they want to say something or participate. One final thing on the scheduling side, Sally, is there is a tool within Zoom for paid customers, not with the free tool, but if you have a license for it, and it's fairly reasonable, is the ability to have a registration form. So if you want to schedule ahead of time or get a sense for who's joining ahead of time, that's kind of a neat feature, so that you can put up a registration form, advertise that, and that will kind of automate the rest of the process. So they sign up, give their email address, and then the system can email them, or you can even email them because you've now got the attendees' names and email addresses.
So that would be good, especially if you're doing something with more of a group that you don't know. It's not mm-hmm. just your Tuesday morning Bible class group of right. 10 or whatever, but something you're opening up maybe to the community or whatever. And having that registration information would probably benefit you after the fact as well. So you sure. could circle back and,
yep.
follow up.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I usually talk a little bit to is the user experience from your perspective, from the presenter's perspective, or even the participant, I guess. And that's just the hardware that you use. Use good video and audio hardware. It's not overly expensive to get a good webcam and I would normally recommend a good headset or speakerphone. The brands I tend to suggest are Logitech, the C920 we've talked about on this show many times. It's the one that I use all the time. It's been around forever, and it's just one of the better webcams out there. They have not actually produced a better one in all these years. And then Jabra is a good manufacturer of headsets and speakerphones. So don't count on your computer to provide that for you. These offer a lot more noise canceling and features that are going to just make you look and sound better. The experience is going to be better all the way around. And then, of course, know your environment. Camera angles are important. Usually I would suggest that people put their webcam, if they can, at about eye level. Or maybe even in that area, a little above or a little below is okay, but usually not that desk level where you're looking down at the camera or it is looking up at you. Normally not the most flattering, and nobody really needs to see what your ceiling looks like. So put the camera in a good spot. Lighting is important too. Try and get natural lighting if you can. So position yourself by a window or get some of these video lights. You can get some real cheap ones, circle lights, ring lights that will illuminate you from the front. The worst thing you can do is have a window behind you or lighting behind you. Then you get backlit and your camera gets a little bit confused. And then obviously be aware of what your surroundings look like. Prep your space a little bit. The last thing, if you are presenting, is you want them to be looking at what's on the bookshelf behind you or what Lego model you've recently created that's sitting back there, or the pile of papers that's 2 miles high.
Or maybe a llama hanging on your wall, or llama,
or two,
like that.
Right? Or two. Unless you want that there, right?
Yeah. You can use backgrounds too. I don't know if you were going to mention that, Martin, but that's something that can up your professionalism. Just to put a nice background, you can even customize it with your church or school logo on it, perhaps to give you a little bit cleaner background look.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So be careful with backgrounds. That does require, at least with Zoom, a little more computing power. So the requirements, hardware requirements especially, go up when you start using those virtual backgrounds. So you just want to try it out ahead of time, just so that you don't crash and burn with that. And then, of course, during the meeting, it's probably a good idea to start the meeting with some protocol and some best practices, and talk about how to ask questions and muting and where the audio and video controls are, and are you going to be recording it? Make sure that they're aware of that. How to ask questions, raise hands, where the chat feature is. If you're going to use polls, explain that a little bit. So just don't assume anything as people are coming in. Explain the whole process.
You know, I'm thinking maybe it's a good idea to get a buddy and practice being a participant, even, you know, so that you understand what they're seeing a little bit better and what kind of interface they have as well. You know?
Exactly. Yep. Especially before the first time you do this, or if you've changed equipment or location or something like that. So just kind of work out the bugs and get more comfortable with it yourself. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the last thing I like to talk about is just some general things. Just think about the length of the meeting. And we've got an article that might talk a little bit about meeting best practices that may be applied not just to virtual meetings, but to all meetings. So be kind to your fellow attendees. You know, so think about the length, the time that they've got to spend sitting in front of a screen, how often you have them, and then privacy concerns. I think that's a big thing these days. You want to obviously be sensitive to that, and you know, recording is obviously, there are some concerns about that, so make sure that that is okay and not a violation of the law. So get up to speed on what privacy or security concerns there might be, or certainly if children are involved, you've got a whole other set that you need to be concerned with as well. So lots of things to think about. Fortunately, there's great resources out there. And even from these vendors themselves, like Zoom has a lot of good stuff on their website. And there's some good training webinars. They're doing these all the time. I think Zoom has done just a tremendous job at kind of easy to follow, easy to understand webinars, just to get you totally up to speed on how this thing all works and some of the things to think about, the do's and the don'ts.
Yep. Martin, you mentioned that we have an extra link to throw in the show notes. That would be to an article from Smart Brief, and it caught my eye because I knew we were talking about Zoom, but the actual headline says, "How to Run an Effective Virtual Meeting. Stop Blaming Zoom." So it's not all Zoom's fault. Once you master all that lovely list of things that Martin went over, you still have to know how to run a good meeting. You have to do things like engage everyone and, you know, get participation from the people that are attending. Make sure you have a clear agenda and you start on time, and then follow up, as I mentioned before. So this article is just kind of good best practice really for meetings. It has some of that virtual meeting tied into it, but really no-nonsense kind of stuff for any type of meeting. So check that out.
Unless you think that we have a corner on the Zoom market and know all there is to know, we bring some experts in from time to time. And you know this guy that we brought in for an interview this week, right, Sally?
I sure do. I mentioned earlier, I'm a member at Christ the Lord in Brookfield, Wisconsin. And our pastor, one of our great pastors, we have three actually, Pastor Phil Kasmer was willing to talk with us about his Zoom experience. Like I said, we went all in on the online Bible class in the spring. Right now we're having kind of a hybrid. So a small group gathers at church, but they also use Zoom to do Bible study currently. So we want to hear from Pastor Kasmer about his experience. Joining us today on Wells Tech is Pastor Phil Kasmer, who serves at Christ the Lord in Brookfield, near and dear to my heart. That's my home congregation. Welcome, Pastor Kasmer.
Good morning. It's nice to be with you.
Well, we're happy to have you. We would love it if you would take a moment to introduce yourself to our Wells Tech listeners.
Sure. I am serving, as Sally said, at Christ the Lord in Brookfield, Wisconsin, which is just outside of Milwaukee. I've been serving at Christ the Lord my entire ministry so far, since 2007, so that's 13 into 14 years. It's been a beautiful and wonderful place to serve with Pastor Colander, David Colander as an associate, and Jason Free, and lots of wonderful teachers and principal on our faculty, other staff people. I'm married to my wife Kimberly, and we have three children, Zoe, Adele, and Micah, all who go to our school here at Christ the Lord. And I like to do ministry, of course. I like public speaking and reading. For what it's worth, I'm hoping this fall to start a hunting hobby. We'll see how that goes.
Wow.
And since coronavirus, we are also dog owners. And so now I enjoy long walks with my wife and our dog in our neighborhood, too.
Very good. That means since coronavirus, you haven't experienced winter with the dog
and
those
right.
long walks, huh? So that'll be a new adventure.
That will be a new adventure.
Excellent. Well, on our show today, we're talking about Zoom and video conferencing in general. And we wanted to speak with you on that topic because I know we use it at Christ the Lord and thought your experience might be valuable to others who are working with it in ministry or considering it. Maybe a good place to start is for you to tell us a little bit about your background. Were you a super well-trained video conferencer before COVID arrived?
I was not. I mean, I suppose if I was listing hobbies and things, I could probably put tech. I like computers and setting that sort of thing up. So it's not a issue learning curve wise, I guess, for me. But prior to Zoom, I had pretty much only used, I think, Google Hangouts, maybe for some synodical meetings or things like that, but very infrequently.
Mm-hmm. And now maybe you'd consider yourself a bit of an expert, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I feel like I've got a pretty good handle on most of the settings for Zoom and a couple different ways that we've used it. I like it as a tool. It was definitely a blessing when we in Wisconsin had a lockdown time, mm-hmm. and just to connect people to ministry when we couldn't be connected face to face.
Phil, one of the obstacles with using a technology is obviously to know it yourself and get comfortable with it so it doesn't stand in the way. How about those people on the other end of the screen? Talk a little bit about how it was implemented and what their experiences were, maybe bringing them up to speed and getting comfortable with it as well.
That's a good question. We had to be careful as we started to put out, you know, email and directions to say, okay, we're going to use this tool Zoom and here's a link you can follow. And I think we had to learn on our end, you know, whether and how much to use a password for entry and different mm-hmm. settings. We've kind of gotten down to pretty minimal now where we just, for our Bible class, say, send a link and say, if you're Zooming in, here's the link. And they seem to click in. But at the beginning, we did have to do some pretty specific direction about, hey, everybody, I'm going to ask you to make sure your microphones are all muted
right.
and different things, which I can't remember if that wasn't a setting at the beginning, but I know now when I set up a meeting, I go in and say, participants' microphones are muted from
right.
the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was probably the biggest one. Other than people getting kind of booted out at times and then having to be let back in. We usually control our Zoom classes or meetings with an entry room, I guess. And so then that's kind of management on our end.
Okay. So was there a different, before we get into exactly how you were using it, you know, within the context of Christ the Lord there, how did it change the way you approached delivery and planning and kind of doing things, you doing ministry type things, or did it?
I think it definitely changes the focus in whatever you're using it for. So in lockdown time, we were only on Zoom for Bible class. And so I shifted almost my whole presentation style to say, I'm going to use a PowerPoint and I'm going to put it on the screen. And we're actually going to walk through this Bible text verse by verse on the screen. And I'm going to highlight and circle. And those are things I have not done as much in a mm-hmm. face-to-face class setting. Mm-hmm. And definitely, of course, you have to pay all your attention to whether the people are actually digitally connected.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I think in the physical realm, you've got a little more leeway. People are sort of, they're present, so you know they're there at least. But they can fall in and out of the meeting digitally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, likewise, if we're, you know, live stream is obviously not the focus of this, but, you know, same there. In worship now, I got to make sure I look at the camera.
Right.
Before it was kind of, am I panning the crowd?
Right.
But now I want to look at it. So that too, just the physical focuses, I think, are a little different. You have to attend to them.
Right. So were there ways that you tried or did something differently to engage them different than you would maybe if they were all sitting in the fellowship hall or the Bible study room?
I think most of our, between the three of us pastors who have used it, most of our ways of engagement had shifted a little bit more to direct visual stuff like you know, circling, highlighting, and whatever text on screen or actually bringing up illustrations in a PowerPoint. Our PowerPoint was on their screen.
Rather than just the talking head.
Right? Correct. Otherwise, though, you know, as we went along, I think we learned better to say, especially when it was Zoom-only Bible class, you know, let's get to a point where if you guys have a question, you're going to either use that hand raise function or you're going to raise your hand or hold up a sheet of paper on the screen so I can see it. And, you know, we ended up putting out questions and trying to have back and forth that way with people. But you have to manage that differently, I think, than just people make a comment in a room.
Yeah, my memory banks are kicking in all of a sudden because I've been in those early Bible classes. We were some of the ones joining in on that. And I remember it being screens and screens and screens of people participating. We have a pretty large congregation. And it seems to me that you actually had two of you in the same room, maybe somebody kind of monitoring the screen. Is that how y'all initially did that? Or
yes, and that... and though now I think our Zoom use has shifted a little bit, that's definitely the case. We've tried, you know, with one of us three, you know, feels much less tech savvy. And so we would definitely have someone else managing the Zoom so that person could just teach.
Kind of a backup.
Right. And mm-hmm. so I think even when I did it, one of the weeks where I planned to do a little bit more robust question asking, I asked my associate, can you sit in the office behind me and you manage the Zoom and you know, shovel questions to me that you think are relevant. So that, I think that's definitely a thing to consider. If you're not super tech savvy, it may be helpful to have a person right there along with you.
Yeah. So now you guys are doing it in a hybrid mode, in a So you're having in-person Bible classes on Thursday night, but you're also connecting via Zoom and streaming those Bible classes. And unfortunately, I haven't been able to sit in on any of those personally, but tell us a little bit about how that experience is going.
So I think that's good. It makes me ask a global question for the future, like how much to do this, but that's probably a separate question. Like, should you keep on? But we have tried to begin saying, if you can, we want you to be present in person. And right now, for various reasons, we just can't get our big Bible class Sunday morning and Sunday school. So that's sort of on pause, and we've shifted to a midweek class in the evening. The use then for Zoom has been kind of supplementary. Say last week, I think we had maybe 20 people or 15 people in person and probably another 20 online. Mm-hmm. And so then we've tried to run a balance. That was a presentation by two of our members about Africa mission work. And we did a balance between getting them on screen and putting their presentation on screen. I ran the Zoom from the back of the church and tried to gather up any questions that people tossed in via the chat. But our Zoom for Bible class now has really kind of pivoted away from having those 15 or 20 faces on a screen and having them ask audible questions. It's really kind of shifted to chatting. That may shift back, I suppose, if Pastor Free is up for the next session, and he may say, I totally feel comfortable to be asking questions of them on the screen and looking at them too. I think it mainly depends on the leader's comfort level.
Okay. For those Bible classes, just curious, how do you promote them, and do you have people sign up, or you just hope people show up?
The pandemic, for as much as I don't personally like it, has been good for making us ask questions. Like, I think we're much better now than we were in January of sending regular email communications to the congregation, mm-hmm. 3 to 5 times a week. 3 of them very regular, probably 2 others on a as-needed basis. So we will promote the Bible class in Sunday school, in bulletins and worship announcements, hit it in the Monday email, remind it in the Wednesday email when our midweek devotion comes out, and then on Thursday morning of that class day, we'll send a reminder email, an invite, and the Zoom link. We haven't done any sign-up because we're doing that class in our sanctuary, and so social distancing-wise, there's more than plenty of room. And I guess we haven't really worried about sign up online with Zoom for any reason. We've just put the link out there and invited people in.
Cool.
And I should say, from among our members, it's not like we put that opportunity out there on the website.
Mm-hmm. What about specific blessings and challenges? Is there anything that you would do different with Zoom now that you've had this experience, or any big wins by doing Zoom-based ministry?
During the lockdown time, Zoom was without a doubt a blessing from the Lord, because we weren't seeing people face-to-face. And suddenly, digitally, we could see people face-to-face. And that was super cool to see. You know, for us, we had, I think, 50 or something connections some of those times, 50, 60. And seeing faces was great. And having a way to connect, that, I think, was a super win. I do think it's a challenge because I don't think it's a replacement for actual face-to-face functions. And we have a vested interest as the church in gathering physically, I think. So it's a benefit for those who are stuck or have a difficulty. But I think it can be a temptation too, where we kind of say, I could just do this instead. And I'll stop in a second here. You could re-ask something else that I pivoted around. But I do think, though, again, it has made us ask. I was just talking about it with Pastor Colander 2 weeks ago. Man, you know, if you had asked me 18 months ago, should we be Zooming every midweek Bible class, I would probably have unequivocally said no. I don't have time to do that. But now I think that is a plausible thing to continue. Just because even for young families who have children who go to bed at 7 or 7:30 and they say, I can't get to a midweek class, is it worth it if we could get 15 other people in addition to 12 or 15 to join us online? I think so.
Mm-hmm. Do you record these and make them available afterwards? I know that sometimes people feel a little bit intimidated going to a Bible study. They don't feel they have enough knowledge or they'd be embarrassed, but that might make it a little bit more approachable if it were just out there so people could view that. And do you have any privacy issues that you've thought through and dealt with?
We haven't recorded any of them. When we first talked about it, privacy was one of the things that came up right away.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure. I would have to investigate more exactly how to make sure we manage those privacy concerns or mitigate them. But our people generally aren't identifying themselves by name if they're present in the class. And the way we've shot the class, it's pretty much focused on the presenter. So I would hope that, yes, we would probably be recording things, probably starting with this next session that we have starting this week, and then find a way to put it either on our website or at request. I'd have to admit I haven't thought that all the way down, but
okay.
That's an easy function to implement.
Sure.
So it's almost why not do it?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Any other uses of Zoom? Have you done any one-on-one type counseling or anything like that with Zoom?
Sure. So aside from in the large group realm, we've had two, I think, voters meetings because we're trying to continue to march forward with a building project here. And so we Zoomed those, and that's been a benefit. We have used it definitely for council meetings and board meetings. I know our faculty used it regularly during the lockdown with each other. But now, in addition to that, I myself have done two different new member meetings. We pastors here always meet with our new members as they come in. I did two of them on Zoom, and that was great. And I think for the people that I participated with, they were both convenience asks. Where they said, hey, I'm working from home. Do you mind if we do this? Sure. I haven't done any counseling that way yet. But there's definitely, it's a good tool to have in the quiver, an arrow to use. I think one of the coolest things, though, or just remembering back, Pastor Free happened to be up for doing our confirmation examination this year, and that obviously was difficult during the not being present on campus time. And he used a combo of Google Meet with the kids. He got the whole class kind of tiled out on the screen, all their faces in Google Meet, and then he piped his Google Meet feed into Zoom. So that the parents could join in on the Zoom, but not have control, so to speak, on the Meet, which was really cool that it worked out really well.
What a neat mashup. Very good. Well, we sure do appreciate you taking the time with us to share your experience. I'm sure there are many who benefit just from, you know, expanding their ideas of how they might use tools like this in ministry. So thank you very much, Pastor.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I look forward to continuing to learning and adding these things in.
Awesome.
Our thanks to Pastor Kasmer for spending a few minutes with us talking about kind of new territory for him and for you, Sally. In your opinion, what's your take on all this that you guys are doing there with Brookfield?
Well, you know, in the spring, it was probably one of the happiest days when we all got together for that very first mm-hmm. time and saw each other on video participating in Bible class. I mean, it was just wonderful. I can remember just scrolling through the screens, looking at everyone and being so excited to right. see our brothers and sisters in Christ. So definitely worth the effort, whatever it took for us to be able to share God's word, you know, as a group in that way at that time. I personally haven't participated in the hybrid classes yet, but I think they have a wise path that they see this isn't going to go away. Like, we're going to see ministry done with video conferencing in the future, even in that hopefully not too far distant future when COVID isn't so much of an issue for us anymore. So, you know, the investment, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think as we talked about in that interview and as we've talked back and forth over these COVID conversations, I think that there's going to be a new normal. And in ministry speak, that doesn't necessarily need to be a bad thing. I think there are different opportunities to use tools like this and maybe even reach more people more effectively. So I think that's a real positive. And clearly, the good folks at Brookfield have taken advantage of that. And hopefully we can watch that grow.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, Sally, I think let's move on to our tips and or picks of the week.
That sounds great, Martin. I am excited because today, October 20th, is the day that my friends at TechSmith have released a brand new version of Snagit. So Snagit 2021 officially launches today, and you can go to their website, get a free trial, buy it, buy the upgrade if you have the product currently, and just keep in mind they do have nonprofit pricing, so you want to look for that if you are interested in purchasing the product. So what is Snagit? For those of you that are new to Wells Tech and haven't heard me talk about it over the past 12 or 13 years, I will say Snagit's probably my number one software choice. I am a huge fan. It's basically a screen capture software, and you can do that with a lot of different things. You push a special button or combination of keystrokes on your computer keyboard, and you get a picture of what's on your screen. But Snagit does so much more for you. And technically for me, it's my image editing software. So I take images there that I haven't taken as a screenshot and, you know, work with them, manipulate them, crop, you know, add overlays, whatever it is that I want to do. Over the years, they have just improved this product so much. And currently, the big focus for them is helping you to do different documentation or presentation materials in a very consistent and clean manner. So they have buttons to clean up your screenshots, maybe kind of make them a little more generic so that instead of something that has a date on it, for instance, or whatever, you can just include a gray line to represent that there's text there or whatever. They make that super simple for you, and then they help you build color palettes and, like I said, use different templates and layouts so you do things consistently, perhaps across all of your documentation or presentation resources that you're creating. They do so much more. They have obviously great training because they take screenshots and tell you how to do everything. You can add arrows and text and all kinds of stuff to make use of it. But one feature that was recently added is that you can take a screenshot and then highlight some text on that image, and it will convert that to text that you can edit. And so you can mock up screens of what you want them to say if you want to change the text, or if you just want to grab some text from an image that you have, you can do that. You can do video recordings in Snagit. You can add all kinds of stamps and make things your favorite if you do the same kind of things over and over again. And I could go on and on because Snagit's pretty versatile. I would certainly encourage you, if you haven't tried it, to download their free trial and try it for a few days and go through their tutorials. Just like you mentioned about Zoom having great tutorials and things, definitely the people at TechSmith have great resources to help you learn the ins and outs of their tools. So, happy Snagit 2021 day. Today is the day it launches, and hopefully you will be enjoying their product.
Very nice. So I'm looking at their website, and it looks like education, a new purchase is $30, $29.99. And then nonprofit is $42.99. So those of you maybe without schools that want to take advantage of this, $42.99, as opposed to $50. Mm-hmm. For the kind of the standard. And then the upgrade price, if you already have a copy, is lower than that, quite a bit lower, in fact. So take advantage of that. Yeah, they've added a lot of nice features here. One of them is that automatic video or GIF creation, so mm-hmm. that you can, you know, take the Snagit and then you'll go right into the annotation right away, just kind of a seamless way to do some educating. That's pretty cool.
I love the GIF thing because, you know, you can't really embed videos into email, but you can embed images. GIF. And if it's an automated little 10-second thing or whatever with a GIF, that's a way to get kind of a video playing in an email.
Yep. Don't have to upload it to YouTube or anything like that. Yeah.
Right. They have a feature where you can record your iOS screen and send it through your TechSmith account to Snagit for editing. So that's pretty powerful as well.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Nice. All right, good pick. My pick of the week is actually a little bit of a backstory. My soundbar, we have a TV in our family room, and we had a soundbar attached to it that was just really flaky. It was a cheap Vizio, I think, was the manufacturer. And it had decent reviews, but you get what you pay for, and it eventually would not stay on for very long, which is not a feature, you know, of a sound bar. Go silent. We'd have to turn it back on, and it'd go silent, and you have to turn it back on. So decided to upgrade. So I got a Bose, kind of a nice middle-of-the-road sound bar, kind of smallish but good sound. But as are many things these days, it is Alexa-enabled. So it's got a little Alexa inside of it. So you can talk to your speaker. That's why they can put that word smart speaker on it. It's called the Alexa Smart Speaker 300. That's not my pick. My pick is basically the Amazon Alexa app. So because we got this speaker, I got back a little bit into home automation and some of the things that we can do with turning lights on and off and how it connects to the Ring doorbell and opens the garage door, et cetera, et cetera. And it turns out the Alexa app, and I hadn't used it in a while, is really handy at a lot of different things for creating reminders and shopping lists and, you know, all that automation. You can create routines and scenes and all that good stuff. And one of the challenges with using Alexa on your phone, on your smartphone, whether it's an Android phone or an iPhone, is you can't really make it the default speaker, the virtual assistant. You have to use kind of the onboard, you know, Siri or Google Assistant if you're using those products. But you can get the next best thing. So what I do, and I'll have a little video here too, is use the Alexa app, and the Alexa app just obviously is like any other app. You touch it and it opens. One of the settings now, and they just recently updated it to allow this, is once you open the app, you can immediately talk to it. So you don't need the wake word or anything, or you do need the wake word, but you can do it basically hands-free. So you don't need to tap anything else other than just have the app open. So now it's just a single press to open the app, and then you've got kind of a little Alexa, you know, in the palm of your hand, and you can do it hands-free. I find this particularly useful in the car. So you're just touching the phone to open the app, and that's it. You can actually, if you're really ambitious, just ask Siri to open or Google Assistant to open the app, and then talk to the assistant of choice. And there are reasons why I'd want to talk to Alexa rather than Siri anyway. Alexa, I believe, is a little bit smarter. In fact, I believe she's a lot smarter. So I'd rather talk to her than Siri any day. But so there's a video here about hands-free setup for that. But just in general, I'm really impressed with what Amazon has done, you know, to the Alexa app. Just made it, you know, super useful, and you can play podcasts and all kinds of things with it at this point. It's just kind of a little portable Alexa device, you know, that comes along with you. So that's my tip of the week.
Cool stuff. I'm still hung up on the flash briefing feature. That's pretty sweet in the Alexa.
Isn't it? Mm-hmm. I use that all the time. Yep.
Yeah.
Listen to my daily devotions and my through my Bible in 3 years and NPR and all the other stuff that I line up on the way to work.
Good stuff. You know, Martin, I talk to Siri all the time, though, because it turns out my upstairs neighbor is named Siri. So I always chuckle to myself that I get to talk to Siri when I pass her. Yeah.
Spell the same?
I don't know how she spells her name, but you got to think she hears a lot of jokes about that. But
I bet she does.
Anyway,
yeah.
Yep.
Does she sound like Siri?
You know, maybe so a little. I hadn't really thought about that, but she does have a little bit of a Siri sound. So,
well, I'm sure she's smarter than Siri.
Yeah.
The virtual assistant Siri.
There you go.
All right, let's move on to ministry resources.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that the Gospel Outreach with Media event has launched once again. This must be about their fifth or sixth year that they've had conferences online. And what this is a collection of presentations / essays that people have written around gospel outreach with media. And there's a period of 3 weeks each fall where they open these up for discussion. So there's a discussion forum built into the website. You can go there and read. Many of them have associated videos and things that you can watch and just kind of get exposure to all kinds of exciting things going on using media. And that's, you know, a pretty broad definition. And I went out and just took a quick look the other day and found a couple that I got really excited about. Friend of Wells Tech, missionary Mike Hartman, who's part of the One Latin America team, actually has written about a VR project, a virtual reality project that they're experimenting with virtual reality from first century land of Israel. So Mike's actually got some videos linked to in his presentation where you can get a feel for this VR that they're developing. They apparently got a grant from Multilanguage Publications, and they are working on this virtual reality to be delivered a prototype early next spring. So pretty exciting stuff happening there. I hadn't heard of that project. And then I saw something by Pastor Philip LePeck, who did a project basically bringing content via the internet to internet-friendly TVs in assisted living and nursing home settings. So once again, he got a grant and was able to purchase, I think that he used Chromebits for this project, and was able to install things on the Chromebits, plug them right into the TVs, and people had easy access to church services and other devotional type material that they made available. The challenge there, and he admits it in his presentation, is that the Chromebits have been kind of sunsetted, I believe. They aren't producing those anymore. So he's looking for a different solution that would do the same kind of thing. And they're out there. It's just a matter of technology changes so quickly. He's going to look around for something new. And then one more I thought worth mentioning is from Philip Wells, who's also a friend of Wells Tech, has been on the show before. And he has a really interesting article about closed captioning, or actually closed and open captioning, which I didn't really understand the difference between until I read his article. And he actually took his presentation and made a video of it. And that video is closed captioned to kind of demonstrate some of the different techniques that he's talking about as you work through his write-up. He's invested a lot of time in learning about this technology, and he shares a lot of great insight into how it's done and how to do it well and things. So that's just a few of, I don't know, 15 or so presentations that are available out at gowm.org, gospeloutreachwithmedia.org. And again, the The discussion forums will be open for about 3 weeks. It just started yesterday. So definitely take some time and read through some of these and engage with the authors and other commenters in a discussion around them. Share them as well. There's great content here.
Awesome. Yep. Worth the time. And it goes for the 3 weeks. Just be aware of that. In fact, it's already started, of course. Mm-hmm. But just have till November 9th.
There you go.
Community feedback.
A couple things worth mentioning here. One was that Google has rebranded themselves. They're no longer G Suite, but they are Google Workspace. And along with that rebranding, they changed the color of their icons and made them slightly different. So if you're noticing some of that rollout with your Google icons and things, we have an article you can get all up to speed on this change for Google.
Yep.
Always something new.
Always, yeah. sometimes just subtle differences with new names and kind of tough to keep up at times. But mm-hmm. Take a look at this article and be prepared. I also wanted to share, there was a note out to the Google group, our Wells Tech Google group, and I had asked Justin Lippert to post this here because I had saw a discussion on the Wells Area Lutheran High Schools list, actually not just Area Lutheran High School, but Wells High School list, because he's on that as well. And he posted a thread from Reddit that talked about a way to enter a command in your Google Drive search bar to determine how and what every person in G Suite perhaps accidentally hit share all on. And you'd be surprised at how many times it happens, apparently. But this is obviously a security issue, so that if you have people sharing stuff on Google Drive, there's a keyboard command, source:\, whatever your domain is, and then you can find what every person in your G Suite account has shared to all on. And so it's a good kind of way to keep up and just make sure that was their intention and that we're not creating any privacy or security violations. So he did share that there. So take a look in the show notes. And then visit. If you're not a member of the Wells Tech Google group, now would be a great time. You can get to that at the top of our show notes page. There are a bunch of links up there to social networks, and that is one of them where you can be a part of the conversation, the Wells Tech conversation, but also ask your questions and get lots of good answers. So Justin's was just one of many there, so take a look at that. But I thought that was good information to try and make sure you know what's going on and who's sharing what, because that can be an issue. So,
yeah, definitely good.
All right, let's move on to Wells Now, Sally.
Yep, and we want to make mention of a recent Together video update. So maybe a little bit about what Together video updates are. They come out, I believe, every 2 weeks or so, and it's just kind of a newsy item from around Wells, hosted by Nicole Balza, our good friend. And recently, October 13th, they came out with a Together video update where they interviewed Pastor Eric Recker, who's our Committee on Evangelism director, and they have a new congregational evangelism kit out. So I was really excited to hear about this. You can watch the video on our website, and then we'll have links to that congregational evangelism kit, which includes all kinds of things about getting started, creating a prospect database, how to use the database, how to welcome people to worship and follow up with them, just a lot of good techniques and information that you can make use of with your evangelism committee. And then also mentioned in the video is the C20 resources. This is for Christmas this year. So you can get in on ordering invitation postcards, and then there's all kinds of evangelism resources related to your Christmas services, worship resources, Sunday school type resources, Lutheran Elementary School resources, graphics, all kinds of great things that they've bundled together over on wellscongregationalservices.net for use for this Christmas. So check out both of those and watch the video to learn more.
Very good. Thank you. That's going to about do it for the show today. Thank you for your time, everybody. We really appreciate your listenership and encourage you to come back and bring a friend next time. Speaking of next time, we're going to have another interview talking about rebranding your organization. There are some great examples out there, and I talked to somebody who's actually gone through that process about how to, if there's a name change or you just want to kind of give kind of a new flavor, feel, look to your organization. Just some great information coming at you next week or next time. And we're also going to return to our book knowledge section. Atomic Habits is the book that we're looking at, and we're going to look at the second law, chapters 8 to 10, for those of you following at home. Make it attractive. Great book about establishing good habits, getting rid of bad ones, just kind of being a good steward of what God has given you. That's going to about do it for us. Thank you so much, and we will talk to you very soon. Blessings.